Ryan Rashog joins us. Shogger, breaking news, buddy. Breaking news. It's good thing. It's good timing to have you on Pause of Friday. Majot just whispered this in my ear.
And Majot whispers in your ear?
Well, he threw the microphone into my earphone. Right?
Does he like come over and pull your headphone gently aside and whisper into your ear?
No, he actually hits the cue button down. If you were ever in studio, you'd understand how the high technology works in radio.
So over the mic, does he whisper? Does he like, hey, I got breaking news?
Well, he does, actually. That's exactly how it sounded.
Well, it's creepy. Anyway, can we get to the breaking news?
Yeah, breaking news. Well, he said it was perfect timing to have you on, and just because maybe you could help analyze and what you think it means to the game. But Chris Bosh is out for the NBA All-Star game. What do you think of his replacement?
It's
by the way,
it's
Al Horford, by the way, from the Hawks, because I knew you knew that, but I just thought I'd throw that in.
Of course, yeah. No, I'm not preparing for a ski trip this weekend and literally just sat down at my computer for the first time today. No, that didn't happen. I don't know. What do you want me to say, man? Is what it is. It's going to be a good weekend for Toronto. The NBA on display should be a lot of fun, and I think our network will do a great job covering it.
Well, I was stunned that they didn't send you down, because they're having a celebrity basketball game. Why aren't you in it tonight?
Yeah, no, I regularly get beaten at 21 by both my 11 and 13-year-olds, so I don't even play celebrity hockey locally, never mind basketball.
That is true. I think you've stiffed us every year for like the last 8 years for the so-called WHL player. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Just saying, you know.
Well, it has a little bit of something to do with the fact that the last time I tried to play hockey with my friends in a sort of remotely competitive game, I ended up getting loaded into the back of a guy's truck because my back clicked out. So, I think those days, if it's anything more intense than just a little backyard shinny, then I usually duck and cover.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it's a good thing you mentioned in the back of the truck, because I was like, last time I played, I ended up getting loaded. I was like, what? Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Oiler fans were loaded on excitement as McDavid and Eberle and Pouliot and Cam Talbot in goal, especially in the first period, really kind of put on a clinic last night at Rexall.
Yeah, and I like that you mentioned Talbot, because while the story was McDavid and the sub-story was Jordan Eberle's first ever hat trick, nobody gets a chance to do any of that if Cam Talbot doesn't keep that game close. And did a really nice job in the first period. I was sitting down in that end for a chunk of the game, and he was just really solid and really good positionally, made some really nice saves, just with his team kind of floundering and not really moving at much of a clip. He just went in there and did his job. And that is a reliable baseline for goaltending performance that Cam Talbot is showing he can bring. So that, I think, is where the praise needs to go at a certain point. But, yeah, it was an incredible night from McDavid. And that line looks fantastic. He looked so dangerous. The caveat needs to be how bad that Leafs team is. But it's still the NHL, so we can kind of get past that and marvel what was a phenomenal night from this kid.
Oh, fantastic. And that line, really, like Jordan Eberle and McDavid, just the chemistry on the ice. Eberle's always been a very good shooter. He was, the guy had 76 points and, 63 points three times before ever playing with Connor McDavid. So, I don't buy the thing, well, McDavid's suddenly making Eberle a good player. He was a good player. Now, he might make him a more productive player. There's no arguing that. But he was a pretty productive player before Connor McDavid arrived on the scene.
No, he was, but when you play with a player of McDavid's ability and with his vision, his ability to set people up and just make unbelievable plays, like I was talking about this morning, how when I was sitting up top for a chunk of that game watching, and it's a pretty, you're way up top there when you're in the press box, you can see things pretty good. And McDavid gets the puck in behind the other team's net and makes a play that I didn't even know. I had no idea was there. I never saw it develop. And the amazing thing about him is how fast he does it. I mean, not only does he make unbelievable plays, he makes, like, touch pass unbelievable plays. Like, he knows where it's going before he gets it. And his ability to just put the puck into the perfect spot, it's uncanny. His vision is, I mean, for a guy who is one of the best skaters in the world already and one of the best stick handlers in the world already, his best asset might be his hockey sense and his vision, which is unbelievable. I mean, he's elite in so many of those categories. And we saw it last night in just a bunch of different ways. He just sees the ice different. His synapses are firing at a completely different speed than most everybody else.
His speed to me is just off the charts. And, you know, the thing about his speed is he knows when to go and when to kind of pause. You watch some breakouts. Yeah. He'll come out of the corner and he'll hesitate a bit to ensure the winger's got the puck, and then boom, he hits him. But you know, him and Eberle on the give and goes. And you talk to any skilled player in hockey, when you can find a teammate who understands how to work a give and go, like we saw it on the easy one on the third goal for Eberle, of course, where they kind of were like, no, you take it. And eventually McDavid gave it back and Eberle got his first career hat trick. But early on, like all over the ice, you're just seeing give and goes between those two. And Pouliot, just his style, bigger body, you know, can get in the corners and create some turnovers. Right now, there's not anything to dislike about that line.
Well, and after the game, we're in the dressing room talking to those guys. And I mean, the look on Eberle's face, like he's just, I mean, and he said, I mean, there's just not much else you can say about the kid. Like, it all speaks for itself. And then you talk to Pouliot, and same thing. I mean, what a fantastic opportunity for Benoit Pouliot to, you know, play on essentially a first line. And, I mean, his production, if he can play well enough and stay on McDavid's line, and his production takes a huge bounce from that. It really does, because Pouliot can produce on his own, but not at the clip that he's going to have the chance to here with this guy setting him up. So you talk to those guys after the game, you can tell they're just grinning like Cheshire cats. They just know. And not every night is going to be like that, but holy smokes, when this kid gets going. And the one thing I thought they did a good job of last night, maybe outside Pouliot early, he passed up a couple of shots and tried to force things. But I thought Jordan did a good job last night of not trying to force the puck to Connor, waiting for the right chances, not being afraid to skate with it a little bit. They're getting their timing down through the top end of their zone and the neutral zone. They're getting their timing down and when to hit each other, when to go, where to be. And that's one of the things that in the very short period of time that Connor and Taylor played together, they never really got that sorted out. They never had time to get that part of their game sorted out together. You know, breaking out of their own zone and in the neutral zone. And that never really clicked. Jordan has stopped trying to force the puck to Connor. And I think that that's helped. It's been more natural and more organic. And now they're just finding each other.
It's hard to have chemistry in two games. I think a lot of people overblow the lack of chemistry in Hall and McDavid because they only played, what, like two games together?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying there wasn't chemistry. My point is in the games where they played together, that was one of the things that they struggled with, was figuring out how to match speed or be at the right speed or how to hit a guy through the neutral zone. They both like to, you know, grab that puck and go to sometimes. So I think Jordan was trying to force the puck to Connor a little bit too much over the last three or four games. And I think last night he got away from doing that. He just got back to making good hockey plays. And I think that helped them. So, I mean, the Taylor Hall, Connor McDavid thing is interesting because they didn't get much of a look. And you'd think that they'll want to give it another look at some point, but I'm sure they love having world-class players on, you know, spread across two separate lines. That gives the owners a dangerous look and fits for other teams. So, you know, it'll be interesting here for Taylor. His game's fallen off a little bit. I think there's some frustration creeping back into his game. We've seen this come and go in spurts. You know, Todd did not hold back at all last night, maybe ripping into that line a little bit, being pretty honest in his assessment of them, which I'm sure he told them as well. But it'll be interesting here because Taylor and Leon had some success before, and then it dipped, and then it came back, and now it's dipped again. And, you know, Taylor's putting together a fantastic year. He's been really, really good all year long. But he's going to have to maybe battle through some frustrations. You know, this other line's going to get a lot of attention, and he's got to just keep doing what he was doing before, which was play a high-octane, speedy offensive game, but also be smart in his own zone. Because if he's not smart in his own zone, he's going to start banging up against the coach, and then that's when things will go a little bit more sideways, and that's what's been happening lately.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Ryan, a few other things on the, you know, the one end, of course, you've got McDavid and Eberle in that line completely rolling. Yep. Draisaitl and Hall, and they'll be split up at least to start the game tomorrow. Hall's going to, just like they were in the third period, and actually in the third period, Hall, Letestu, and Cassian, Hall had five shots on goal, and that line was quite good, actually, and they will play together. Draisaitl will start with Purcell and Pakarinen, and Todd McClellan was very quick to point out, hey, I'm expecting Draisaitl and Hall to get back together very soon, but I mentioned those three lines. You know, Yakupov's now with Korpakovsky and Hendricks, and Nail Yakupov. Like, I went through his last 20 shots on goal, Ryan. None of them have come within 20 feet of the goal. He's become a perimeter player, which has never really been his thing. And right now, he just looks almost lost.
Yeah, he's been lost for a little bit here. I mean, for sure. His game is, his game's really fallen off. I mean, I can't remember who said it yesterday, and maybe they don't want credit for it, but the line I heard was Nail plays like he's being chased by bees. Like, he's just like 1,000 miles an hour in every different direction, just vibrating, stick handling the crap out of that puck, and just like he's back to doing that stuff again, where he's just vibrating out there. There's, you know, that what he showed when he played with Connor is he kind of calmed his game down a little bit, stopped overhandling it, stopped trying to hit home runs every time he touched the puck, and just kind of settled his game down a bit. Well, now he's back to trying to do too much, and it's in a desperate attempt to make offense happen. So it's gone really bad here. Like, his game is really, really far gone. And I don't know what the answer is, but the problem Nail's going to have is that he's not the priority. There was a time when making sure Yakupov, you know, was given the right opportunity to figure his game out, or given the right line mates, or given, and some could suggest that he was never consistently given that. But I do think that they have worked with this player for a long time here. But he is no longer the priority. He doesn't make or break a lot whether they're going to win or lose games here. There's other guys that can do what he's supposed to be doing. And so he's going to find himself on a fourth line, and he's never been a guy that can produce on his own. And I don't know how this gets better without him landing with some of those other top forwards. And maybe when Nugent Hopkins comes back, there's a mix or a formula where he can be more featured. But Nail, in my opinion, is in a tough spot, because I don't think he gets his game sorted out on the fourth line. I just think that's where he goes to play.
Yeah, it's tough right now because he just, you know, he's struggling. I'm not sure, you know, what they can do. Honestly, it kind of comes that time where it's, you got to earn your ice time. And it's because I always hear the people, well, it's who you play with. Well, I looked at Taylor Hall for one period when he got put with Mark Letestu and Cassian, which some people would call demotion, depending on how you look at it. And they had five shots and created a lot. And today,
they were good.
And today, Taylor Hall said, you know what? Maybe Letestu can help bring me along defensively. Because he feels that he knows that, because Hall knows if he's playing too much defensively, then you're tired and you can't get in the offensive zone, so you're not creating as much offense. Like most young guys have finally figured it out later on in their career. And that's just something where it doesn't matter who you play with, the good players find ways to create chances. Obviously, you'll probably score more points playing with McDavid over Letestu, because McDavid will just get you in better situations, but it doesn't mean you can't produce opportunities and get to the net by playing with a guy like Letestu.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you know, for Nail, I mean, he's never been a guy that you can put him with whoever and he'll have a good game and make things happen. Like, he needs to feed off of other good players to have offensive success. He's just never been a guy that can generate a whole lot on his own. And so the problem is here is that his style of play, he's been passed by a couple of guys. I mean, he's clearly been passed by Purcell in terms of offensive opportunity. He's being passed by Cassian. I mean, if Teddy Purcell gets traded, I don't think Nail Yakupov's a natural to just slide into that spot. I think Cassian probably gets the look with Hall and Draisaitl longer term. So Nail's got himself into a bit of a spot here where, I mean, they added Cassian. Purcell's come on and played well this year. Everly is healthy now and is the fix with McDavid. Nugent Hopkins will be back. I mean, it's not, you know, maybe there's a fit with Nugent Hopkins. That's never really worked great in the past, but maybe that's that third trio. I don't know, man, but it's going to be tough for him because he's in a spot where he's not fitting in really anywhere. He doesn't have a lot of skill around him. He's having a tough time generating. And rather than be consistent and smart and keeping it simple, and he's just trying to do too much. And it's just the effectiveness has just come right out of his game.
One last one before you go on your ski trip, Rashog, and hopefully you're wearing your helmet and some other special equipment for you.
Body armor and
yes,
a back brace.
Yeah, exactly. Wear a back brace for sure. Teddy Purcell, Justin Schultz, Nail Yakupov, Eric Greiba. How many of those guys are an Edmonton Oiler on March 1st?
Yakupov and Greiba.
Or do you think they're going to keep Gravel?
I have a funny feeling they'll take a look, see what his value is, and I think maybe they sign him. You know, maybe they sign before the deadline and they keep him. But I could see them moving Purcell. I could definitely see them moving Justin Schultz. I don't think there's going to be a deal for Yakupov because he's been that bad, and I don't think they're going to be willing to just give him away. So I think maybe they hang on to him. They've got him under contract for another year to try and build some form of value in somewhere and make a move with him eventually that gives them some value back. But I think Purcell and Schultz go, Gravel re-signed, Yakupov stays put. That would be my guess.
Schauger, have
a game. By the way, sorry to interrupt you, but if I were a team heading into the playoffs right now and I needed some depth up front, the player I'd be asking the Oilers about is Matt Hendricks.
If you're the Oilers, do you trade Matt Hendricks?
Ideally not. Ideally you don't, because he's important in that locker room, and they don't have a lot of what he brings. But I guess it just depends on what the draft pick looks like, and if it's a good enough draft pick, maybe you have to consider it. He's a valuable part of their team, but he's got 1 year left on his deal, and I think teams would be interested in him.
Yeah, I could see that. He's got 1 year left in his contract. If you're the Edmonton Oilers, a vocal guy in a room that's not very vocal, yep. I would elect not to trade Matt Hendricks for what likely is probably a second or a third round pick that won't help you for 5 years. Me personally, I've seen teams that stay at the bottom give away proven NHL players for future hope, and it rarely leads to them being more successful the next year.
Fair enough.
Schauger, have a great ski trip, my man. I'm sure you'll be cuddling up by the fire watching the game tomorrow night. And I mean the skills competition at the NBA All-Star game. And maybe you'll check in on McDavid after that.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, we'll be out at Sunshine. I hear the conditions are decent, so it should be fun.